taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read, we study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, things have been a little crazy here at the Constitution Study. Busy, a good busy, but I'm still happy to come here every day, spend some time, look at what's going on, and try to help everybody read and study the Constitution and teach that rising generation to be free. You know, one of the interesting things about the Constitution, the government our founding fathers put together, was this idea of decentralization. If you read the 10th Amendment, you realize that there are only a limited number of things that the federal government, the United States, was authorized to do. Everything else was pretty much either left to the states or to the people. It was dispersed. We had multiple copies. And actually, one of the things, if you read the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, one of the things Jefferson and Madison were concerned about was this centralization of power. We talked the other day about the separation of powers and the need to not have power centralized in a individual or in a group. But that's true not simply of the branches, but this need to diversify the locus of power, the loci of power. They be not centralized. Because what happens when power becomes centralized? What happens when power migrates from the states into the United States, into the federal government? Well, as we've talked before, you know, Lord Acton warned us, power corrupts, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. So we can imagine that as power consolidates into a smaller and smaller area to fewer and fewer people, not only is the opportunity for corruption grow, but the opportunity for that corruption grows exponentially. You know, as power centralizes, those who seek power, those who are willing to use power for their own ends, well, they have a natural place of attraction, a place to be drawn to, where they can exercise the power they so crave. And we have to look at what the long-term outcome is. Now, most of us really only have a few decades of experience to look at and say, well, this is how the world works. We kind of assume that what we have is, well, it's normal. It's the way it's supposed to be. But I want to take a look at some of the consequences of our repeated allowance to the centralization of power, the collection of power amongst a few people in this country, and where that's led us. So as we've allowed the United States, the federal government, to assume more and more power, well, of course, they have to spend more and more money. And contrary to popular belief, Congress isn't authorized to spend money on just anything else, even though they do. Now, for decades, as the federal government was assuming power, they at least went through a normal appropriations process. But you see, the problem with that is they have to keep justifying what they were doing. So now we spent the last, 20 plus years going from financial crisis to financial crisis. And the latest is a $1.5 trillion spending bill in order to avoid the government shutdown. And I know every few months we say, oh my God, we've got to do this or the government's going to shut down. Let it. You know, if we actually let the government, because first of all, a government shutdown is never a government shutdown. The federal government never actually shuts down. What they do is lay off non-essential workers, or they furlough. They don't even lay them off. They furlough non-essential workers and stop doing non-essential things. Which, of course, begs the question, if they're not essential, why are they doing it? Now, again, people tend to get very upset during these shutdowns and, oh, what about the people that got laid off? And for furloughed. And of course, there are people saying, well, if the government shuts down, we're going to miss out on stuff. But it's interesting, you know, the stuff that gets shut down, it's never the really critical stuff, is it? People still get Social Security checks, Medicaid, Medicare still run. Of course, these are also illegal programs, but that's a whole other issue. So I remember once many years ago, I got roped into a family trip to go to the Statue of Liberty. Now, this is back in the early 90s. And we show up at the Statue of Liberty, and I'm with my wife and her mother, her father, her grandmother. And that happened to be when the government, quote unquote, the government shut down, and they shut down Liberty Island. So we'd gone all the way to Battery Park in New York City. We couldn't go see Statue of Liberty. Now, that was disappointing, yes, but was it tragic? No. No. And my first, of course, my response now is, why is the federal government in charge of Liberty Island? It exists between New York and New Jersey. They have a port authority that already regulates a property that is shared between the two states. Why is it up to the federal government? Because we've turned over everything, or I should say so much, to the federal government. But if you've got a $1.5 trillion spending bill, how much do you think the people who have voted for this actually bothered to find out what's in the bill? Now, of course, people have been talking about, oh, there's money in there to help with Ukraine. There's money for funding COVID vaccines, which, of course, is just another boondoggle. There's all sorts of stuff. It's a porculous bill. It is the way the government's figured out that they can just pull the wool over the American people's eyes. Rather than having to justify all of this spending, we turn it into an emergency, a crisis. We've got to do it now. You cram all the junk into it and then ram it through. Or, as Nancy Pelosi likes to put it, well, you have to pass the bill to see what's in the bill. Now, none of this is fiscally responsible. None of this is constitutional. But we're back to the question of why. Because we, the people, as the federal government assumed more and more and more power, we let them get away with more and more shenanigans about how they come up with that funding, how they appropriate funds, how they authorize the spending of funds, even how they do their accounting. That is why we are $30 trillion in debt. We're $30 trillion in debt because we kept asking the government to spend money it doesn't have on things it's not authorized to do. And when the finances got tight, we sat back while they played more financial games to come up with spending bills that we can't afford. By the way, you want to know why your gasoline is $4 plus a gallon? It's $4 plus dollars a gallon in large part because we've allowed Congress to spend $30 trillion more than they actually have. Yeah, we like to point the finger and say, you know, it's this person's fault, it's that person's fault. Look right in the mirror, folks. We either ask the federal government to spend money they didn't have on things they're not authorized to do, or we actually sat back while they did it. This $1.5 trillion spending bill and all the other spending bills and that $30 trillion in debt, that's because we, the American people, sat back and we let the government centralize things that the states are supposed to do. See, the main difference between a state budget and a federal budget is most states have to balance their budget because states can't print money. They can't simply make up money out of thin air. The federal government does. And that is why we are in such a fiscally unsound situation. It's why we have a debt that is larger than our gross domestic product. But before we start blaming Congress, remember, every one of those work for you. The House of Representatives, the people who put together the spending bills, each one of them is hired by the people of your district to represent the people of your district. They're your fault. Every one of the senators who approved this legislation was elected by the people of the state to represent the state. And before you start blaming the president can't spend money unless Congress authorizes it. No money may be spent unless appropriated by Congress. It's your representatives that have made this mess. We can't avoid the responsibility we, the people, have for the mess we currently are in. But the other problem we run into with the consolidation of power is we give, you know, people can assume power they're not authorized to. Between the fact that we've allowed so much power to be centralized in the federal government, we've allowed Congress to centralize their so much of the power that they've assumed, legal and illegal, in the president, we now effectively have a king. Well, for example, President Biden has issued, or I guess is planning to issue, an executive order to explore the creation of a digital currency, a U.S. digital currency. Now, excuse me, but where in the Constitution is the federal government, much less the president, authorized to create a digital currency? Yes, the closest you could come is the Congress is authorized to coin money. Yeah, Article 1, Section 8, Congress is given the authority to coin money. But we're not talking about coining money. We're talking about creating an entirely new currency. Now, is a digital currency is it the right thing to do? Let's kind of set that aside for a moment. This is the president deciding that he's going to authorize the investigation of creating a digital currency, a U.S. central bank digital currency. If this would be done, it should really be done by Congress, not by the president, because he's not acting on a law. Tell me, what law is there that says we need to investigate creating a digital currency? The answer is none. So not only have the people not authorized the federal government to do this, Congress did not authorize the president to do this. Hence, well, Biden's acting more like a king than he is a president. But I have serious concerns about a digital currency. And this brings up an interesting theory that I've heard. I'm sure some people consider it a conspiracy theory, but follow along. I don't know if you've noticed, but for months there has been a shortage of coins. At least that's the claim, right? You go to the store and they say, please, you know, we're not handing out coins because we're out of coins. There's a short of coins. Why? Why should there possibly be a shortage of coins, at least a natural shortage of coins? Now, granted, more and more people are using digital currencies. They're using credit cards and debit cards, so there's even less need for coins. And of course, we've all seen those machines that will take your collection of coins and, you know, sort through them and give you most of it back in folding money and bill currency. But why would there be a limit on coins? Now, I've heard plenty of people come up with rather interesting theories about why the federal government doesn't want coins. The same reason they tried to get rid of certain bills. See, the idea is to restrict a person's ability to conduct commerce outside of the oversight of the federal government. You see, if you've got a digital currency, for those of you who don't understand how digital currencies work, you've all heard, hopefully, about the blockchain and understand what the blockchain is. All the blockchain is a distributed ledger. Think of it this way. We're all familiar with the ledger, right? So you write down a transaction and it exists in that ledger. The problem is if only one person has the ledger, then only one person really knows what's going on. So the idea behind the blockchain is simply to say what we're going to do is we've come up with a system where instead of having one person with a copy of that ledger, we're going to have hundreds and thousands of people, of systems with copies of that ledger, and we're going to do it in such a way that it makes it extremely difficult to cheat. So if, let's say, right, we're dealing with digital currency. So let's say you get your paycheck, your company issues instead of it sending you a check, they simply go to your wallet, that is your digital wallet, your account, for lack of a better term, and they deposit money. And what happens is the blockchain, this transaction happens, it goes to a bunch of systems in the blockchain, and they all say, okay, we all agree, we've all got this transaction, you received a paycheck in this amount, and they all agree to record it, and whoosh, it's now there. And the idea is it's never supposed to be erased. I say supposed to be because we're dealing with computers. And if there's one thing computers are good at, it's corrupting data. So now we have a digital, now we're talking about having a digital US currency. See, if all of your transactions happen through a digital currency, they are all on this blockchain that everybody can see it, which is its great thing, right? It's transparent. Do you want the government knowing everything you spend money on? Now, most people say, well, if you have nothing to hide, Paul, what do you have to worry about? I may not have anything to hide, but I have everything to protect. Because what happens when the government decides they don't like what I spend my money on? See, I've already been blocked. I've been banned from Facebook because of what I've said, what I've written. I've had videos taken off of YouTube because they don't like what I say. What happens when it's the federal government that says, you know what, Paul, we don't like that you spend money on that. What is it? Well, maybe they don't like the fact that I'm buying arms and ammunition. You know what, Paul, we've seen you buying a lot of guns lately. We don't like that. We're not going to authorize that transaction. Because the thing about a digital U.S. currency is you've got to have it, the federal government basically authorizes each and every transaction because it's the federal government that's recording the transaction. We've already seen presidents. We saw President Obama try to use the position of his office to strong arm banks into not working with gun owners, to not working with gun stores. Do you really think the federal government wants to say, you know what, now we don't have to strong-arm banks, we can simply say we're going to limit the amount of firearms or ammunition you can purchase because we won't record the transactions. And if we don't record the transactions, well, the gun store owner doesn't get paid. And if he doesn't get paid, he's not going to give you the ammunition. Or maybe the federal government decides they want to limit, they want to ration how much gasoline you could buy. Well, because you all know that gasoline, that burning gasoline contributes to global warming, and it's an existential threat that has never actually happened and is a complete farce. But the federal government now can say, we think you've bought enough gas this month, Paul. And since we now control the transaction, we get to say, no, we're not going to allow it. You go to the gas station, you put in your U.S. central bank digital currency card, and it says, nope, transaction denied, because you don't like what you're spending your money on. Oh, you want to go, you're buying zinc and ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine? Nope, we're not going to authorize that transaction. See, the thing about cash is it's anonymous. You get paid, you go to the bank, or you go to the ATM, you get cash. Nobody needs to know what you're spending that money on. Now, that means it can be used for nefarious purposes, but it also means the government cannot control what you spend your money on. What happens when we give the government the authority to determine what you spend your money on, to effectively give you a financial kill switch? How is that any different than what's going on in communist China? Maybe that's what they want. Maybe they want us to be like Communist China, where you have a social credit card score and you go, you know, you decide that you want to fly to Florida for a vacation and you go to book your tickets and the federal government says, nope, we're not going to authorize that transaction because your social credit score doesn't meet our standards. See, it goes to a very dark place. And you may not believe that the current actors, that's what they have in mind. But think of it this way. The power you give the government today will one day be wielded by someone who doesn't like you, by your political enemy. Do you really want to give them that power? Now, private digital currencies, they're interesting because instead of having the government set the standard for what they are, you have just agreement of private individuals. It's more of a barter system. They call it currency, but it, what you're really talking about is we've all agreed that a Bitcoin is worth roughly about X amount of dollars. So if I want to have a transaction with you and we can agree on a certain number of Bitcoin, federal government doesn't know, federal government doesn't care. But you see, the federal government wants to manage every part of your life. In a White House statement, it says the United States must maintain technological leadership in this rapidly growing space, supporting innovation while mitigating the risks for consumers, businesses, the broader financial system, and the climate. Tell me that they're not going to use this. See, they say, we're doing it for your own good. We want to protect the consumer. We want to mitigate your risk. You're a business owner. We want to mitigate your risk. I'm sorry, I don't believe them. They want to control you. And Americans so far have given up so many of their rights to allow the government to control them, all in the name of being kept safe. The question is, will we do it again? I call on the members of the House of Representatives to file articles of impeachment against the president for acting beyond the authorization of Congress to determine whether or not we should implement a digital currency. Unless Congress authorized the creation of a new coin or the investigation of a new coin, the president has no legal authority. Where are the representatives of the people standing up against this kingly tyrant? The answer is the one political party is all for it. The other political party is just plain coward. That's right. I called them cowards. You're afraid to stand up because you're afraid that you'll be called names. That's what it appears to me. And because we hire cowards that are unwilling to stand up and defend the rights of the people, to defend the Constitution they swore an oath to support, we may lose so many more rights. You know, it's interesting. The Third Amendment says they cannot house military during peacetime on private property, because the idea of having the federal government living in your house is so anathema. A digital currency means the federal government will be living in your house, in your wallet, in your pocketbook, in your mind. You know, I say there are two ways to determine what someone considers important, what they spend time on and what they spend money on. And the federal government is seeking to create a digital currency where they will know everything you spend your money on. And before you say, well, this is just going to be another option, baloney. That is irrational. There is no logical reason for the federal government to create a digital currency except for it to replace our current currency. That's the only thing that makes sense. Will you sit by and watch while your children and your children's children live in a world where every transaction, every financial transaction they have is spied on by the federal government? I mean, think about it this way. Do you remember when they were trying to pass legislation where they wanted banks to report every transaction of $600 or more to the IRS? They didn't get that, did they? So now what are they going to do? And the only reason they even think they might be able to get away with this is because the American people have allowed them to centralize power and have stopped challenging them. So I call on the members of the House of Representatives to at least submit a resolution of protest that Congress did not authorize the president to make such an investigation, to look into this. They did not authorize the president. They did not authorize the Department of Treasury to do this. Therefore, this is a usurpation of power. Furthermore, that resolution should include criminal penalties should the Department of Treasury, anyone in the Department of Treasury, comply with this illegal executive order to violate the Constitution, violate the rights of the people, to violate the boundaries of the Department of Treasury as established by Congress and by the people of the United States. But again, we won't see that because, in my opinion, we have hired cowards that are more interested in party politics than they are in protecting your rights. Now, I have to head to a break, but before I do, I would like you to check out, please, constitutionstudy.com. You'll find all the information about what we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You can sign up for the newsletter. I'm going to ask you to ask a question. It doesn't have to be this big, intelligent thing. If you have a question, go to constitutionstudy.com. Find the ask a question, click on it, ask the question, just hit the check mark that says you want me to answer it here on the radio. I want to put together another Q&A segment, and that's the best way to go about doing it. But you can find out where I'll be speaking. You can invite me to come speak at your event. All of that's available there on constitutionstudy.com. Also, please head over to healthycell.com. You know, I actually went to the doctor the other day. And they do the blood work, and they check all your vitamins and minerals, and I take supplements. So let's face it, the food that we eat today doesn't have the same nutrition that it did when our grandparents were growing up. So I take supplements, and I've been taking Healthy Cell. They're designed to give you a healthier lifestyle and not deal with the pills. Now, they've got lots of different formulas. You know, one of the ones I use is the Immune Super Boost, especially when I'm traveling. You know, when I'm on the road and I'm meeting and greeting, and or as they like to call it, gripping and grinning, it's good to have that extra oomph to your immune system. Well, they've got different formulas, but as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. So go to healthycell.com, try any of their formulas, try the Immune Super Boost or the REM Sleep or any of them. Just make sure when you check out, you use the code Out Loud. You get 20% off. Healthy Cell knows that you're an America Out Loud listener, and they help support this program so that you'll keep the Constitution Study on the air. Wonderful. Everybody wins. So make sure you head to healthycell.com, and when you check out, make sure you use that code Out Loud.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about the consequence of the centralization of power. The consequence of putting so much power in Washington, D.C., in the bureaucratic state, in the executive branch. We start off the hour talking about the new budget fiasco, the budget buster, the latest spending bill, the porculus, and how we've allowed the federal government to simply do whatever it wants, do whatever we think we want done, and let someone else decide to pick up the tab, and the drag that has on the economy. We talked about the President Biden's executive order looking to create a digital currency, a U.S. digital currency, in effect, give the federal government the not only the ability to observe all of your transactions, but to actually approve all of your transactions. Don't think that's such a good idea. It certainly isn't a constitutional idea. So now let's take a look at something else. Now, we've talked about the government branches. I saw this article about the Securities and Exchange Commission. That, again, it's one of those executive agencies that has dubious constitutional authority. And one of the things they're proposing are some new rules involving short selling. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with how the stock market works, the stock market's all about buying and selling shares of companies. They're basically, and I'm terribly oversimplifying it, but there are two ways to make money in the stock market. One is called a long sale, the other is a short sale. The long sale means you buy money, the price of the stock goes up, you can then sell it for a higher price, and you've made money. So yes, you can make money off of dividends and all that stuff, but we're just talking about the price of the stock. So if you believe the value of the company, the value of that stock is going to go up, you buy, it's called, you just buy the stock, and sometimes called going long, because you think in the long term, it's going to be in good shape. The other is to bet that the value of the stock is going to go down. It's called a short sale. It's a little convoluted, but let me see how I can make this sense. Basically, and I am really oversimplifying this a bit, basically, you are promising to buy the stock. You're going to get money for a stock that you promised to buy later. It's the best way I think I can understand it, so most people will follow. So the idea is, if the stock is worth $100, you get $100 and you say, I will replace this stock in 6 months. And if in 6 months, the stock goes within the next 6 months. In 6 months, if the stock is now selling at 90, you buy the stock at 90 and you pay off your $100 with $90. You've made a $10 profit. Right? Going long means you're betting the stock is going up. Going short means you're betting the stock is going to go down. And there's a psychological impact to short selling. It's you're basically thinking the company is in trouble or something bad is going to happen to drive down the value of the stock. Well, SEC Chairman Gensler doesn't like that. Now, again, it has this connotation of short selling is bad. But it's not. It's simply believing that the value of the stock is going to go down. But we've stigmatized this idea. So now the SEC chairman wants people who short sell to basically report it to the SEC. Now, there are some limitations, as you know, people who are holding $10 million in short sales or 2.5% of the outstanding shares. But they're these people who are simply making the assumption, making the belief that, and I say bet, it's not really a bet. If you've done your research and you have reason to believe the stock is going to go down, short selling is a perfectly viable way of telling the market what you think, and the market will adjust. And if you are right, you make money, and if you're wrong, you lose money. But we've turned this, you know, they are blaming short selling on wild price swings in equities based on GameStop. If you don't remember, there was this group of investors. They shared investment information. They all believed that GameStop was going to go down. They short sold it, and it went down. And then they made a lot of money, and people got very upset with them. Now, the funny part is, if they'd done the exact same thing the other way, in other words, if they had bought GameStop and it had gone up and they'd made money, no one would have said boo. But we're artificially placing a good-bad valuation. Buying stock is good, short-selling stock is bad. But that's not true. These are just what you think that stock is going to do in the future. It wasn't the short selling that caused that was the sole reason GameStop went down. Yes, a lot of short selling does put downward pressure on the value of the stock, the same way as a lot of buying puts upward pressure on a stock. These are not good and bad evaluations. They are, from a stock point, it's what is going to happen. There could be a lot of reasons why a stock would go down over the short term. Stocks sometimes go down in a calendar cycle based on, you know, business cycles, or you may have a stock that a company that is in a bad position for their product. You know, they're behind the curve in their marketplace, and there's a lot of reasons why you might think it's going down. But the SEC has said, you know what, we want to regulate that. We want to know, because we want to discourage people from short selling. So if you look at the stock market and you believe there are certain stocks that are going to be going down over a certain period of time, the SEC wants to discourage you from short selling. And I don't think that's the role of government. I don't think, you know, I look at the Constitution, and one of the things the Constitution doesn't say is that the federal government is to regulate the financial markets, the equity markets, the values of stocks. Now, I know they want to prevent these boom bust cycles and others, but the problem is it's rather like forest fires. You know, we came to this idea that any fire in the forest is a bad idea, so we spend millions of dollars putting out every little bitty fire so that when the fire actually gets going, it has so much fuel, it quickly gets out of control. Well, it's the same type of thing. The more the federal government tries to regulate and keep the markets where they think it is, eventually something bad happens and it goes out of control. And we can see it with the dot-com crash. We can see it with the mortgage crash. We can see it happening over and over again. The point is, did the people give the federal government the authority to regulate these equity markets to work the way they think they should work? See, if you cannot invest in the downside of a market, if you're basically trying to artificially keep the market going up, well, it's like putting air into a balloon. Eventually, it's going to burst if we don't allow the downside as well. Because it's normal, it's natural, it's part of business cycles. And it's just another example of the federal government trying to control things it was never designed to control. Speaking of not being designed to control, how about this idea of misinformation? Once again, we have the Surgeon General wants big tech companies to report on COVID misinformation. This really rubs me the wrong way. This really honks me off, because the very idea of the government deciding what is and isn't misinformation is anathema to America. It's anathema to freedom. It's a violation of the Constitution, a violation of the First Amendment. Yet here we are again, seeing another member of government, this case, the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, trying to deter to get people to report on what other people said because he doesn't like what they're saying. When you see misinformation nowadays, and this has become true not just in government, but in the media, but and in social social conversations as well, misinformation now is effectively defined as information I don't like. Information that contradicts me is now considered misinformation. So this is true of the people that whether it's, again, government actors or just people on the street, if you provide information that contradicts their preconceived notions, that's considered misinformation. So it could be easily ignored and set aside. It's a propaganda technique. So again, we have a surgeon general. We have a person who's, again, a job that doesn't exist in the Constitution, a job that doesn't have a constitutional authorization, trying to manipulate the way people think of what is and isn't true, not based on data, but based on a label. We're just going to label this misinformation. And the sad part is when it's found out that the quote-unquote misinformation is actually true, nobody goes back and says, you know, all that misinformation is actually true information. We apologize. It's just like it magically never happened. But you see, when you give government the ability to determine what is and is not true, we no longer live in a free country. When the government can simply label information as misinformation and demand it be turned over, you're talking about infringing on a people's right to free speech and freedom of the press. And yet nobody, I'm still waiting, folks. Where is the lawsuit suing the Surgeon General for attempting to squelch freedom of speech and freedom of the press? Where are the U.S. attorneys filing charges of Title 18, Section 242, because he's trying to deprive people of the right to freely speak and to freely print their understanding of the information? Where? It's not, because the people who would charge Mr. Murthy work for the same guy as Mr. Murthy, the President of the United States. This is what happens when you centralize information, when you centralize control, when you centralize power. Everything now becomes within one sphere, and you have a small group of people with an outside sense of influence because we've centralized all the information and power there. If the Surgeon General says it's misinformation, how many people will simply say, yep, that's misinformation. We can't pay any attention to it, not because of facts, not because of data, but because, understand, the Surgeon General is a bureaucrat. That's all there is. It's a fancy, they put a uniform on them. It's a fancy title. It's a bureaucrat. It's a medical bureaucrat, an attempt to control medical information so that you get to hear what the government wants you to hear, not what may or may not be true. Now, the consequences of this consolidation of power, well, sometimes they hit us very close to home. Frontline doctors have filed a lawsuit, and in this lawsuit, they allege that the federal government, and particularly the Food and Drug Administration, which is supposedly there to protect public health by ensuring the safety, efficacy, and security of our medical products, were aware of numerous issues in the so-called COVID-19 vaccines, yet let them loose in the world anyway. Now, I'm not here to talk about the details of the lawsuit. I'll probably get to that on another program as the case develops. But I want you to realize, you know, for some reason, many Americans think that, well, the federal government is, to put bluntly, as pure as a wind-driven snow. That those who get a federal paycheck would never do anything wrong. And, you know, the FDA is there ostensibly to provide for public safety, but it's just another government agency. Is the FDA really that different than any other corporation, any organization. The only difference is it's part of the federal government. Therefore, its opinions are given the force of law. But the people who work there are just as prone to the same malfeasance and same mistakes as anyone else. And the last 2 years have shown these same government actors. Again, we've talked in the past about the lies about what is called a vaccine. It's not legally, two of the three, the quote-unquote vaccines, are not legally vaccines. That they are experimental drugs. They're gene therapy. And that they have been applied in violation of the Nuremberg Code because you are getting people, you are coercing people into a medical experiment without fully informed consent. Now, if Pfizer or Moderna had tried to do this, if they have tried to coerce people into taking their product, people would be up in arms. If they lied about its efficacy, if they lied about the dangers, people would be lining up to sue them. But here you have a government agency that lied about the safety, lied about the efficacy, lied about the side effects, ignored all of the medical ethics to say, we have a treatment. Treatment was available from the very beginning, effective treatment. We have the same FDA attempting to cover up its malfeasance by denying people access to their records. But for some reason, because it's a federal bureaucracy, we're supposed to say, they can do that. They can lie, they can cheat, they can coerce, they can extort. We'll let them get away with it because it's the feds. See, to me, that's a twisted way of looking at things. I don't think someone becomes a better person because they get a government paycheck. And the Food and Drug Administration is not some benefactor that is an omniscient and inerrant. You know, there's only one omniscient being. It's God. Certainly is not the Food and Drug Administration or any federal bureaucracy. But we've centralized to the point where the only way, you know, you can legally use certain drugs is if a federal bureaucrat says it's okay. Think about the power. Think about the doctors who knew better, who had treated patients with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and saw them get better. I interviewed a Stephen LaTulip on this radio program who said, we treated this long before they even called it COVID. We treated it. He didn't have one patient enter the hospital, much less die. But no, the federal bureaucrat said, that stuff doesn't work, even in direct contradiction to the evidence that it does. This is what happens when you centralize power. The corruption becomes almost ultimate. Yeah, power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts. Absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. So you have a Food and Drug Administration that normally says it takes 12 to 15 years to authorize a drug, but we're going to do it in a few months for a disease with an average death rate of less than 1%. Does this sound right to you? This is what happens. This is why our founding fathers wanted a separation of powers, a distributed power base. Hey, if New York and California want to treat this like the end of the world, if that's what their people want, let them. And when the rest of the country looks at them and says and rides through it without the harmful after effects, they learned. And if the rest of the country was wrong, well, they would have learned. Instead, the entire country pays because of a few bureaucrats that think they know better than everybody else. And if that's a medical side, well, take a look at this. We are in the middle of some record-breaking inflation. I put gas in my car earlier today. I don't even want to think about how much it costs. It was over $4 a gallon for regular gasoline, for just regular unleaded gasoline. I went shopping and the prices of everything seem to be going up. Now, inflation is not that difficult a concept. Inflation basically means you've got more money trying to purchase fewer goods. Therefore, the value of those goods goes up. I don't remember, about 15 years ago, I remember seeing a study. They took a look at the median house price over the last several decades. And they tracked it in two things, dollars and gold. And what they found out is that while the house prices have gone way up in dollars, they didn't go anywhere in gold. Which means it wasn't that your house was worth more, it's that the dollars were worth less. So here we have inflation driven by trillions of dollars made out of thin air. Just a compute keystrokes away and trillions of dollars show up. They get dumped into the economy. And while initially the economy was pretty stagnant because it isn't simply the presence of money. That money has to be chasing goods. It has to be trying to purchase things. So as we lift these lockdowns and we have this money now chasing fewer goods, exacerbated by our supply chain issues, we see record-breaking inflation. Inflation like, I haven't seen this since the 70s. I mean, that's the level of hurt we're heading for. But in the middle of this, what do we have? We have a U.S. senator that wants to dish out more COVID relief. Again, COVID, a disease that everybody now is admitting is done for. I mean, it's a seasonal bug. The mask mandates, Hawaii is the last state to lift its indoor mask mandates. The mask mandates are disappearing. The vaccine mandates are falling at the courts. The House opened itself up for mask mandates. The entire country is finally coming out from under COVID. And you have a U.S. senator saying the feds need to spend more money on COVID relief. They need to make the problem worse. See, if you have too much money following too few goods, adding more money, the solution to rate to the prices going up is not to add more money. It's to get out of the way. Now, interestingly, the president said that we should reduce costs, yet what do we have here? We have Chuck Schumer saying, no, we're going to throw money at the problem. So that seems to be the federal government's answer to everything. We just throw money at it. Just throw money at it and it'll go away. It's truly the cure is worse than the disease. Now, again, if this was at a state level, well, then the other 49 states could learn from it. But that's not what's happening. We don't have options because we have allowed the centralization of power to turn these petty bureaucrats into petty tyrants. As COVID is going away, Chuck Schumer wants $22 billion more in COVID relief. Why? Because it gives him more money to bribe the American people with. Plain and simple. So every one of you that are complaining about what Chuck Schumer's doing, but ready to accept a COVID relief check, you're part of the problem. Because a bribe takes two sides. The one offering the bribe and the one accepting the bribe. So if you're looking at this going, you know what? If they get this passed, that'll be nice to have a few extra bucks in my pocket. Then you're part of the problem. See, the thing about the design of America was this idea of independence, not dependence, independence. 1776, these states declared themselves independent from the mother country, from Great Britain. The people were independent. We were free. We had rights. We had freedoms that were protected by the supreme law of the land. More and more, we let power become centralized. We either stood by and watched while it happened, or in many cases, we cheered it on. So now we have centralized power, and we are becoming more and more and more dependent. What are we going to do? See, that's the question that everybody wants an answer to, but nobody seems to like the answer. The answer is stop suckling from the government. Stop giving it power. Stop suckling from its bribes. Realize you are a free citizen. Realize that probably 90% of what the federal government does is null and void because it is not a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Read and study the Constitution. That's what John Jay said. Read and study the Constitution. Teach the rising generation to be free. He said, by knowing your rights, you'll sooner perceive when they're violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. That is what the Constitution study is all about. I want to help you read. I want to help you study. I want to help you teach. I want you to know what your rights are. I want you to recognize when they're violated. And I want you to be prepared to defend and assert them. Because until we the people start standing up, looking the government in the eye and saying no. You know, Ronald Reagan had a line. He was asked once, how do we get the federal spending under control? He says, you get federal spending under control the same way you protect your virtue. You learn to say no. Well, if you want to protect your rights and freedom, you need to look at the government and learn to say no. No, we did not authorize this. No, I will not accept this. No. And we teach our governments, our state governments, to look at the federal government and say, no, we're not doing that. We're not accepting your bribe. We're not letting you consume even more power. Because like a black hole, the federal government is sucking in our power, our liberty, and our freedom. And if we don't stop it, we'll get sucked in with it. And it will be a black day indeed. Now, you can find all of my shows, get all the latest podcasts. Just go to AmericaOutLoud.com. Take a look under our shows or under schedule. You will find the Constitution study. You can be in the know, and you can help spread the blessing of liberty to yourself, to your posterity, and to the rest of the American people.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail.